tail. I'd always appreciated his attention to it, but in retrospect, it did make him seem a little fussy. Chet hung his arm out the open window and put the Scout in gear.
Straight home?
It was too early for lunch, but I wasn't ready to go back to Carmina's, not unless I wanted a stern talking to. Seriously, how many people stole a green beach cruiser circa 1965? Know of any good bike stores in town? I asked.
Used or new?
Definitely used. I'm in the market for something pretty specific. A green beach cruiser with a basket between the handlebars. The paint has to be peeling. Scratches on the frame are vital. Oh, and it needs a wide, padded seat. Think I can find one of those? Chet whistled thoughtfully.
Sounds like there's more to this story.
I tossed my hands up. I lost Carmina's bike. I rode it to town this morning for a job interview, which I totally rocked, by the way. I paused my story to give him a high five. And when I came out, it was gone. Stolen. First the Mustang, now the bike. I'm not having any luck. She'll probably ground me. Having to stay at her place 24/7 is about the worst punishment I can think of.
The Charlton brothers, Chet mused to himself.
What?
Jimbo and Billy John Charlton took your bike. Don't take it personally. They do it to everyone.
Their names are really Jimbo and Billy John?
This is Nebraska.
He had a point.
I know exactly where your bike is, Chet said, making a hard and illegal U-turn in the intersection.
I grabbed the granny handle for balance as the tires clipped the curb.
Where? Junkyard.
They steal bikes and dump them in the junkyard?
Nothing better to do. They live in a trailer park near the railroad tracks. Dad's a drunk and on his way to join his wife, who died of cirrhosis of the liver a few years ago. The Charlton boys don't go to school, don't have jobs, and don't pay taxes. Rumor has it they've both made inappropriate advances on their little sister, Millie Sue.
Ew.
Town disgraces, Jimbo and Billy John.
Well, that's what happened when people got stuck in a place like Thunder Basin. Once the inbreeding started, it was all downhill. Drug dealers, bike thieves, and perverts, the whole lot of them. Thunder Basin's junkyard was framed by a high chain-link fence topped with barbed wire. Chet parked at the rear of the sprawling acreage to avoid being seen by the attendant at the front gate. We weren't likely to get in trouble for trespassing, Chet assured me, but if we went through the front gates, we'd have to pay for any property we left with. I wasn't paying for a bike that was mine, Carmina's technically, to begin with. Chet walked along the outer perimeter of the fence and went right to the spot where the chains had been cut to form a hidden seam.
When Dusty was 12, the Charlton brothers took his bike. Haven't changed their M.O. in years.
We slipped through the fence, walking down rows of old cars piled three high and ancient appliances. We passed a mountain of tires, axles, and other car parts. Retired tractors and farm equipment had also made their way into the junkyard. Chet turned down a row, and at the end of it, I saw a large hill of dirt. Atop the hill was Carmina's green beach cruiser. That's it, I said, quickening my pace. I came to an abrupt stop at the base of the hill, dismayed to find the dirt had a sticky mud-like consistency and was strewn with hay. It smelled awful. I was a city girl, but I didn't need to live on a farm to know that I was standing before a heaping pile of fresh manure. I'm going to kill the Charlton brothers, I muttered vengefully. Chet clapped me on the shoulder.
First step's the hardest, kid.
I glanced at him hopefully. I don't suppose... Chet flipped his palms up and backed away.
No way. You're on your own.
I took one tentative step onto the manure. My sandals sank easily. Wrinkling my nose, I let my thoughts travel to a myriad of gruesome ways I could dismember Jimbo and Billy John Charlton. Knives, chainsaws, an ice pick, my own two hands. After slipping and sliding my way uphill, at last I had the bike in my hands. Digging in my heels to steady my footing, I sent the bike wheeling down to Chet. I got my hands dirty in the process and had to close my eyes and count to 10 to keep my composure. When I reopened my eyes, I risked a glance down and was mortified to discover that my sandals had sunk completely into the manure. It was creeping up my bare ankles. I couldn't help it. I shrieked.
"If it makes you feel better, cows are vegetarians," Chet called up cheerfully.
"What will make me feel better is a shower." Tamping down the queasiness rolling in my stomach, I jogged downhill as fast as I could without risking a fall. At the bottom, I kicked my feet at the air, flinging off any clumps of manure clinging to my heels, then took several deep, steadying breaths. After a minute, I'd managed to suppress my gag reflex.
"Where do they live?" I demanded, already striding toward the back of the junkyard where Chet's scout was parked. "Where can I find those two dirtbags?"
Chet waved me off, a strange gleam in his eyes.
"Nah, let karma take care of them."
"I'm not waiting for karma. I'm going to take care of them right now." I bit off each word.
"They're mean boys, Jimbo and Billy Joe. If I were you, I'd take the bike and be glad they didn't stick it someplace worse."
I stopped in my tracks. "Which is it? Is his name Billy John or Billy Joe?" Chet went a little pink at the ears. He coughed, clearly trying to disguise a laugh. I stared at him for a few moments before realization dawned and I narrowed my eyes.
"Oh, no, you didn't." "Oh, I definitely did."
With that, Chet let out a whoop and took off running for the fence. I grabbed the handlebars of Carmina's bike and chased after him, shouting a slew of creative and threatening curses. When I reached the fence, I was out of breath and I could feel sweat trickling down my back. Chet stood on the other side, examining me distrustfully, but not without a slight and mocking smile.
"Told you I'd get you back," he said, smirking.
"Low blow, Falconer." He pointed a finger at me.
"I was just starting to get back in Carmina's good graces by mowing the lawn, and this was a big step backward. Did you see the way she eyed me when she found out I helped you start the Mustang? Tell me that's not worse than climbing a pile of manure."
"Well," I huffed, "what got you in her bad graces?" His eyes widened in disbelief.
"We're still talking about Carmina, right? Does anyone need a reason?"
Point taken. I stewed in my anger a minute, then heaved an irritated sigh. "The least you can do is give me a ride." Chet held the broken fence open and helped me guide the cruiser through. Then he hoisted it onto his shoulder and carried it to the back of the scout. I was still dusting myself off when he came around and held my door open for me.
"Now you decide to be chivalrous," I said, climbing in.
Another snort.
"What kind of payback would it have been if I had rescued you?"
After he swung behind the wheel, he turned to face me sheepishly.
"Still friends?"
"Only if you make sure I get in the softball league. I need a nightlife. Has Pastor Likens talked to you yet?"
"Matter of fact, he has."
"And?" Chet thumbed his nose.
"I figured I can squeeze you on my team. We'll have an extra player, but nobody will care."
"Good." I settled into my seat, content. I was hoping we'd be on the same team.
"You were?"
he asked, looking surprised and pleased.
"Rumor has it you're a good shortstop. I don't want to be on a losing team, obviously." "Right. Well, you're in luck. We're 2-0 for the season."
On the drive back, Chet grinned suddenly in recollection and said,
"Still can't believe you bought that story about Jimbo and Billy what's-his-name."
"It was a legitimate story," I protested. "Totally plausible." He gave an eye roll.
"All small towns in America are filled with inbreeding, ignorant, Bible-spouting rednecks?"
He wagged his head pathetically.
"You can't really believe that. That's like me saying all city types are backstabbing, morally corrupt workaholics."
"The workaholic part is probably true. People go to the city because they have a dream."
"You know what I'm saying."
I sighed elaborately and made a pouty face. Okay, I admit I was wrong and perhaps prejudiced. Happy?
I'm not trying to coerce you into thinking one way or another. I just want you to consider my perspective. I've spent my whole life in Thunder Basin. This is my home. I like it here. But I'm not blind. I can tell you hate it. Fair enough. But I wish you'd hold off judging the town and everyone in it until you've given it a chance.
I bit my lip to hold in a smile. I wish you could see your face right now. You look so serious.
I was sort of hoping for hot, charming, ravishingly handsome, all of the above.
First, you've got to ditch the cowboy hat. He flashed a crooked smile.
At least I don't smell like manure.
Oh, I threw my head back, laughing. I can't believe you went there. Lower than low. That's it. I declare full-out war.
I climbed across the seat and ran a soiled finger down his cheek.
A taste of what's to come.
You're out of your league.
Step up to the majors, I added, fluttering my fingers toward myself in a beckoning manner.
All talk and no walk.
Dream on.
Game on.
We looked at each other and we both laughed. When Chet pulled into Carmina's drive 15 minutes later, he said,
I'll call you about Friday's game. Best number to reach you?
Just call Carmina and ask for me. I'm working on getting my own phone.
When do I get to hear about the new job?
I'd been so wrapped up in locating Carmina's bike, I'd completely forgotten to give him further details. I'm the Sundown Diner's newest car hop. Tips will probably suck, but at least they've got AC.
Chet grinned.
Watch out for the drunk cowboys.
Yeah, nothing I can't handle. I knew he was just trying to scare me. First shift's tonight. Wish me luck.
Don't need to.
His blue eyes zeroed right in on mine, and unexpectedly, I felt strangely warm and a little breathless.
They're gonna love you. We should celebrate after Friday's game. Catch a bite or see a movie. Up to you.
I broke away from Chet's gaze and collected myself. I'd crossed a line just now, and I didn't like how it made me feel. Chet was my friend, but I was devoted to Reed. And you shouldn't need the reminder, I chided myself.
I said, Carmina has been stricter than usual after I took the Mustang Saturday night. I'll have to run it by her.
I didn't care what Carmina thought, and I definitely wasn't running my plans past her. I threw in the comment to cover my bases. I didn't want to commit to giving my entire Friday night to Chet if better plans sprang up later. Assuming I met some people at the softball game, I might get a few more invitations. What I really missed about home, was a weekend party. Lots of people, loud music, a good time. Most of all, I didn't think it was wise to spend too much time alone with Chet. I knew the perils of a long-distance relationship. The mice will play when the cat's away. I wasn't going to be one of those girls. Reed and I had been through too much to throw it away on a summer fling.
Carmina's used to having her way, Chet said. But that house of hers is big enough for two opinions. She'll come around. It just might take time. You doing okay with her?
Yeah, we're peachy, so long as only one of us is in the house at a time.
Must be hard, moving from one place to the next, never knowing who you're gonna land with.
I mused, noncommittally.
How long were you in your last foster home?
Long enough, I said, vaguely. I hadn't expected to feel a moral twinge over lying to Chet. The U.S. Attorney's Office had given me a cover story for my safety. Got it. But Chet and I were on good terms. He was the closest thing I had to a friend. It felt cheap to exploit that, even if I was only here for the summer.
Listen, I should get going. Catch a quick nap before my shift tonight?
Well, that, and plan my revenge. I'll sleep with one eye open.
My smile slipped. Chet had meant the words to be funny, but as my thoughts drifted to Danny Bolando, who was out there searching for me, I realized Chet's joke was spot on for me, too. Dead on. At 4:30, I clocked in my time card. Clearly, the sundown was too cheap to upgrade to a computerized system. Dixie Joe put Innie, another car hop, in charge of giving me a tour of the kitchen and what I presumed was the diner's version of basic training. I couldn't help staring at Innie as she waddled across the white-tiled floor with purpose, barking information over her shoulder at me. Cook station, ice cream machine, malt mixer, storeroom. Her black hair was cut in a choppy bob, and her small eyes seemed permanently pinched in a scowl. She had gangly legs and arms, and she folded the ladder over her skinny chest. But below that, she was soft and round, her belly straining against the fabric of her camo shirt. Innie, who didn't look 17, was pregnant. Really pregnant. Smacking her gum, she eyed me up and down.
Know the difference between French and ranch dressing?
Sure.
Things gonna get real busy round here at 6. You're not gonna have a mental breakdown on me, are you?
I plastered on a false smile because I knew what she was doing. She was trying to put me in my place, but I didn't feel intimidated by her. I wasn't intimidated by anyone in this town.
Tell me what to do, and I'll do it, I said.
Innie slapped an order pad in my hand.
Take down orders, give them to the cooks, then take the food out when it's done. Need me to repeat any of that?
I took an apron off the row of hooks beside the swinging doors, tied it around my waist, and tucked my order pad in the front pocket.
This here's the car hop door, Innie said, walking me over to a side door beyond the cook's station.
A rack of laminated menus hung to the left of the door, which had a porthole window encased in it that offered a view of the side street.
Stand here and keep an eye out. Someone should drive up soon.
I leaned a shoulder against the door and kept my eyes on the road. A couple of minutes later, a truck pulled up and honked its horn.
The hungry beep. That's your signal, Innie hollered at me while balancing 4 salad bowls in a row up her arm.
I pushed through the car hop door. I was halfway to the truck when I realized I had no idea how to greet a customer, much less take an order. Since I wasn't in the mood to have Innie laugh at my ineptitude or give me a General Patton-like dressing down, I tossed my ponytail over my shoulder and tried out an impromptu greeting.
Welcome to the Sundown Diner. I'm Stella, and I'll be your server today. What can I get you?
2 chicken fried steaks and an order of fries and coleslaw each. No drinks. You got that?
Got it, I said, scribbling it down as fast as I could. I'll put that right in.
Inside, I clipped the order to the cook's wheel, but before I could sigh in relief over getting through my first order smoothly, I heard 2 more hungry beeps from the curb.
Let me know when your hands get full, Innie called from the other side of the kitchen.
She stepped out of a large freezer, as big as a room, that shelved rows of frozen food in bags, canisters, and plastic buckets. Frosty air rushed through the open door, which she promptly shut. I had a feeling if the air conditioner didn't kick on in the kitchen soon, I was going to have to come up with an excuse to visit the walk-in freezer frequently. By 6:30, I was too busy for nerves. Every parking space beside the diner was taken. The minute one car backed out, another shot into its place. My hand was beginning to cramp from furiously scribbling orders, and my shoulders ached from carting trays of food between the kitchen and the street. The standard tip was a flat $2, which would have been scandalous in Philly, but it wasn't like I could complain. Who was going to listen? Innie worked alongside me, methodically stuffing her tips into her pocket without comment. I wondered what she was saving for. It was probably judgmental, but I was sure she'd have no trouble getting some kind of government handout for teen parents. Innie snagged me by the sleeve on my way outside.
I should warn you. That's Trigger McClure's truck that just pulled up.
I glanced at the car hop door. I was too far away to see clearly out the porthole window. Who's Trigger McClure? For the first time all night, Innie's expression softened. Wagging her head, she gave me a sympathetic pat on the shoulder.
Don't let him scare you. And don't let him walk all over you.
I pushed through the car hop door and headed for the red truck parked nose first to the curb. The guy at the wheel looked about the same age as Innie and me, definitely high school. Based on Innie's warning, I'd expected someone older, with crooked teeth and mean alcohol-glazed eyes. One of Chet's drunk cowboys, maybe.
Trigger McClure had a lazy, impish smile that played across his bow-shaped lips. Bright red-gold hair fell into hot blue eyes. A few freckles dusted his creamy skin, and I found myself shaking my head to break out of a trance. He looked like a model for a sporting goods store. No wonder Innie had warned me about him. He probably had girls fawning over him regularly. Hard not to let that kind of attention go to your head.
Trigger leaned his gym-chiseled body out the driver's window and crooked his finger impatiently at me.
"I'm next," he hollered.
I walked over, catching a whiff of male perspiration. That, along with his sweat-soaked t-shirt and the baseball glove on the bench seat beside him, told me he'd probably come straight from practice.
"Where's Innie?" he wanted to know.
"Inside. I'll be taking your order tonight." I held my pencil poised over the order pad, showing him I was on a schedule. Not that he noticed, but the car beside him had backed out and a new one had filled its place. Twin toddlers in the back seat whined and thrashed their legs while their mother tapped the steering wheel and fixed me with a "hurry up" glare.
Trigger scratched his thumb across his forehead. "Listen up."
His eyes perused the front of my shirt, and I couldn't help feeling like he was ogling my boobs.
"No name tag?"
I shifted my pad higher. "Would you like to hear our drink list? Pepsi products, lemonade, sun tea."
"Mountain Dew and a chicken fried steak, Miss No Name."
A sultry smile curved his lips as he addressed me with a hint of flirtation.
"I'll put that right in." "You like this, don't you? Making me work to get your name?"
He flashed teeth as white and straight as piano keys. I couldn't say why, but something about him felt vaguely familiar. A ridiculous thought to have since I'd never laid eyes on Trigger McClure before. But I couldn't brush the nagging thought, and it made my guard rise a notch. "I like doing my job," I said, pulling on a bland mask of politeness. If Trigger wanted to learn my name, there were multiple ways, like strolling inside, cornering Innie, and asking her. It wasn't that I didn't want him to know my name. Despite how I was sure it looked, I wasn't being cagey. It was just that his strange familiarity had chased a chill up my spine, and until I had time to sort it out, instinct told me to keep my distance.
"You're a coquettish little thing, aren't you?" Trigger went on, ramping up the charm in his good old boy smile. Coquettish. I had always hated that word. And while he wouldn't believe me, I wasn't stonewalling him on purpose. But the more I stared at him, the more rapidly the synapses at the back of my memory fired. I knew this guy. I just couldn't remember how. Hoping to get away and clear my head, I skirted his truck and headed for the ragged-looking mom with twin toddlers.
"Making you nervous, aren't I?" Trigger drawled after me. "I'll get your name, girly girl."
With only half my mind present, I scribbled down the mother's order, then hustled inside. It was going to drive me crazy trying to place Trigger McClure. His name didn't ring any bells, but his face certainly did. It had changed since the last time I'd seen it, whenever that had been. He'd grown up a bit, trimmed out that baby face, which was why I hadn't recognized him at first. But at some point, Trigger and I had crossed paths, and I couldn't fathom how. When would I have met a country boy from Nebraska? It would have been long before I became Stella Gordon. If I knew Trigger, he might know me, the real me. He was a potential breach in my cover story. Unless he didn't remember me. It was a possibility. After all, it had taken me a moment to recall him. No, not recall. I still hadn't placed him. I was beginning to doubt I'd ever met him. Maybe years ago I'd sat across the aisle from him on a plane, and I was confusing a simple glance in passing with a deeper, more prolonged connection. If I couldn't remember how I knew Trigger, there was a good chance he wouldn't remember me either. I knew I should tell Carmina. Deputy Price would want to know about this. But if they thought there was a breach, they'd probably yank me out. Thunder Basin hadn't grown on me, but the last thing I wanted was to relocate to another middle-of-nowhere town.
I had a job here. I was beginning to learn my way around. And I had Chet. The instant I thought Chet's name, I wondered why I had. Sure, he was friendly, but he wasn't a reason to stay. I supposed I liked how he had a funny way of making me forget I didn't want to be here. I just had to make sure our relationship didn't stray over a certain line. After hanging my new orders on the cook's wheel, I picked up a food tray and started to carry it outside.
He give you any flack?
I glanced over my shoulder to find Innie dispensing vanilla ice cream into a malt cup. She put it under the malt machine, which kicked on with a high-pitched whir.
Nothing I can't handle, I called over the noise. Don't be afraid to yell at him if he gets out of line. Dixie Joe wouldn't fire you over it. She hates him. Probably she'd give you a raise.
Food's getting cold, I said, hoisting my tray a notch. I wasn't sure about Innie yet. Instinct told me not to trust her, but there was something about her, something I couldn't name outright, that I liked. Or maybe admired. She didn't strike me as a girl who'd shy away from demanding her boyfriend use a condom, so I concluded it must have broken in the act. Her pregnancy was a genuine misfortune, not an oversight. Because this girl was as tough as concrete. Like me, Innie didn't back down easily. As I delivered the food to a family of five in a Suburban, Trigger honked his horn. Leaning across the bench seat, he yelled through the passenger window,
"Hey, no name! I want to change my order. Scratch the chicken fried steak, I want a bacon mushroom burger medium rare. And fries. Bring me some of them, too."
I paused, making sure I could pull on a face of serenity before I strolled over. "As a regular customer, I'm sure you're aware of our policy. I apologize for any inconvenience, but once an order goes to the grill, you're stuck with it." With that, I strode toward the car hop door. I didn't want to give him time to argue with me.
No such luck.
"Hey," Trigger hollered, slamming his truck door as he came after me. "Tell Innie to get her butt out here. I don't want you. I want her."
"Innie's working the dining room. You want her? Get a table inside. Either way, if your order's on the grill, and I'm betting more than that, it's probably almost done, you're paying for it. And if you stiff me, I swear I'll do worse than spit in your food the next time you come around." I pushed into the diner and let the door fall shut in his face. The kitchen was hot. Steam from the pots and pans fogged the windows, and I blew my bangs off my forehead, which felt plastered to my skin. I'd have given anything for a reason to step inside the walk-in freezer, but Eduardo, the head cook, was dinging the bell for my next order. Trigger McClure's order, as fate would have it. "I'll grab it in a sec," I told Eduardo. Trigger McClure could stand to let his food cool, and his heels, if I had any say. In the ladies' room, I grasped the sink and blinked at my reflection. My legs throbbed, and I longed for a chair and stool to kick up my feet. I was only 3 hours into my shift, and already, bed sounded pretty darn appealing. Turning on the tap, I splashed my face and wiped down the back of my neck. "Trigger McClure is a self-important jerk who deserves a shot of urine in his next Mountain Dew," I murmured at the mirror. The thought brought a fleeting smile to my lips. It was a thought delicious enough that it just might, I decided, get me through the night. I exhaled, letting my clenched shoulders loosen. And that's when I heard the toilet flush. Innie stepped out from behind the stall door. Just like that, the tension jumped back into my shoulders and the rest of me filled with sickened dread. I began. But what could I say? She'd heard every word. Even though I would never pee in anyone's drink, I hadn't left much ambiguity as to my intentions. Innie stepped up to the sink and scrubbed her hands. Eyes glued to the mirror, she tousled her black hair. Then she gritted her teeth, examining the cracks for food.
"Urine," she said at last.
"Please don't tell Dixie Joe."
"Urine?" she repeated louder. "You couldn't think of anything better than urine?"
Unsure where she was taking this, I ignored her baiting, even though a few more disgusting options had sprung to mind. Perhaps discretion was the better part of valor.
"First time Trigger grabbed my ass on the job,
Innie said. I put a dead cricket in his hamburger. And all you can come up with is urine? She shook her head. Maybe I was right. Maybe he is gonna walk all over you.
Still cautious, I said nothing.
Innie bent over the sink, applying a fresh swath of lipstick. I just told you I put a dead cricket in a customer's food, and you've got nothing to say?
I grazed her eyes in the mirror but didn't fully meet them.
What's his problem, anyway? I asked carefully. Isn't it obvious? He has a small dick.
At last, our eyes locked. Very slowly, we smiled.
He plays baseball, Innie went on. All the scouts got their eye on him. He's a pitcher, and a lefty at that. You ought to see his fastball, 90 miles per hour with a little tail to it. Ball takes a sharp, cutting left-to-right curve just before it sails over the plate.
She whistled with admiration.
And his changeup? About 15 miles per hour slower than his fastball, but with a right-to-left sinking tail. The whole town is convinced he'll play in the majors. And with good reason.
Believe it or not, she added cynically, not many celebrities are born in Thunder Basin. So he's caused quite a commotion. Of course, all the attention has gone to his head and left him depleted in certain other areas.
Sounds like you know a lot about Trigger.
She shrugged.
I know baseball.
If he's headed to the majors, he'll be leaving town soon. That should give you, us, a reason to smile.
Yeah, Innie said, but without the amused snort I'd expected.
If anything, her tone sounded moody.
He asked for you. I told him you're working the dining room tonight.
Innie grunted, snapping back to her sharp-eyed self.
I've worked here long enough to know what he likes. He doesn't have the patience to deal with anyone else.
I waited for her to say more, but she dried her hands and left the bathroom without another word. Still pondering my strange but not necessarily unwelcome conversation with Innie, I gave her a minute's head start, then followed after. I picked up Trigger's order and carted it outside. Knowing Innie was on my side gave me the motivation I needed to face Trigger again. There was something to be said about solidarity.
One chicken fried steak, I said, passing the takeout bag through Trigger's window, and one ice-cold Mountain Dew.
He flung the bag back at me, nearly spilling the drink in my outstretched hand. My temper took an edge.
I can place a second order for a burger and fries, but as I already explained,
get Innie out here now.
It took all my willpower to speak calmly.
As flattering as your tone is, I can't do that. Innie is working. So am I. If you look around, you'll see there are 5 other cars waiting on their orders.
I passed a faux leather check folder with his tab through the window.
We take cash or credit card. No personal checks.
Trigger didn't accept the check folder. He grabbed the soda instead. The next thing I knew, the lid was off and the contents of the cup were flying at me. I gasped, wiping ice-cold soda out of my eyes.
Damn, there goes a perfectly good pop, Trigger drawled.
I counted to 10. I did it again. When I spoke, I made sure my voice was cool and level.
I've heard you're quite the baseball player. Pitcher, is it? Let's hope you handle your balls better than your drink.
Blotchy color flushed Trigger's face, but he merely grabbed himself, hitching his crotch blatantly, and said,
"Wouldn't you like to know?"
Then he slammed his truck in reverse and gunned down the street. I don't know how long I stood staring at the plumes of exhaust rolling off the road, feeling my throat clench tighter. I squeezed my eyes shut, telling myself it was the soda that was making them sting. I felt a horrible and unwanted tickle in my nose and knew I was close to crying. So much for being the tough girl from Philly. I was going to let that jerk make me cry. I hated him for it, almost as much as I hated myself. Right when I thought I was going to lose it, Innie came up beside me.
Here, she said, handing me a dish towel. Just so you know, you've got a ways to go before you catch me. He's done that to me 3 times. 4, if you count the chocolate milkshake. Man, that took forever to wash out of my hair.
I wanted to laugh, but my throat felt thick and slippery.
Dixie Joe will get the money for his order from his parents, but I can't promise a tip. Trigger's mom and dad are his biggest fans. Probably he'll tell them you're a scorned lover and you dumped the drink on yourself to get his attention. Innie looked sidelong at me. You'd be amazed how many girls in this town are scorned lovers of Trigger McClure. Because no way could a girl hate him simply because he's an asshole.
Exactly.
Wanna grab a bite after our shift? I asked Innie, the dampness finally leaving my eyes. The way this night was going, I could use a little company. And despite my earlier judgments, it was starting to look like Innie and I had something in common after all.
Not tonight.
She yawned, stroking her huge belly absently.
I'll be lucky to stay awake on the drive home. Third trimester is a kick in the pants.
When I got to Carmina's, she was waiting up. She sat on one of the faded blue corduroy sofas in the living room, flipping idly through a book. At the sight of me, she removed her reading glasses, letting them hang from the chain around her neck.
How was it? Busy? Legs hurt?
Not too bad.
They'll hurt tomorrow. You should wear support hose.
I had my hand on the banister and I tipped my chin tiredly upstairs. I'm going to bed. Car hopping was grueling work. Even if the library hadn't been closed by the time my shift ended, I wasn't sure I could have made the extra effort to pedal there and see if Reed had emailed me back. And that was saying a lot, because I was basically living for that email. Do you have a computer? I managed to ask Carmina, pausing in my slow drag upstairs.
An old laptop, but it's locked up, she quickly added, making it clear the laptop was off limits.
Let me guess, the Fed said it would be too big a temptation for me.
The people looking for you could track the computer's address straight to Thunder Basin, she pointed out gravely.
It's called an IP address. But beneath my scorn, I felt icy bumps rise along my entire body. I had used a computer at the library to contact Reed. I'd been careful, so careful. But there was always a risk. Telling myself that if Danny Bilondo was on to my secret email account, I'd be dead by now didn't ease my mind. Maybe it was best to lie low for a while. But that would mean waiting even longer to talk to Reed, and I was desperate to plan our future. It was the hope of being with him again that pulled me from bed each morning.
Chet Falconer called, Carmina said.
What did he want?
To talk to you.
Now that that's cleared up, can I use the phone, please? I said with withering sarcasm.
It's 11, Stella. Too late for phone calls. You can try 'em in the morning.
I laughed quietly, but I wasn't humored. Unbelievable. She wouldn't give up. She was as determined as ever to keep Chet and me apart. Maybe I needed to tell her my mom had tried the same tactic with Reed, and look how well that had turned out.
A mannered young woman doesn't make house calls after 9, she added.
That's not what this is about. You couldn't care less about propriety. You don't want me talking to him. Admit it.
Carmina lifted her book, putting her nose in it, ending our conversation. Shutting me out.
So this was how she dealt when things threatened to not go her way. Well, at least I could say the mystery of where my first paycheck was going had just been solved. I needed a cell phone. Stat. I worked the following night. It was Innie's day off, and without her sharp-tongued and pithy observations about life in the kitchen, my shift felt overwhelmingly long. The sundown locked its doors at 10, but the kitchen didn't fully wind down for at least another 45 minutes. Sinks and floors needed to be scrubbed, the ice cream machine needed to be flushed with hot water, and the garbage had to be taken out. Since I was lowest on the totem pole, the other waitresses took off early, leaving me to finish up the last of the cleaning. At a 10:45, I ducked my head into Dixie Joe's office to say goodbye.
You look tired, she told me, scrutinizing me with keenly observant eyes.
How you holding up? Better, I sighed. Didn't screw up any orders tonight.
I heard about Trigger McClure. Figured you would.
She came around her desk, leaning back against it to look at me directly.
Can't stand that kid. Does this for my blood pressure, she marked the air over her head.
Yeah, Innie told me.
That earned me a cocked eyebrow.
Innie Foxhall? Talking to the new girl?
What's the world coming to?
She went on to explain. Innie's slow to warm to people. She's built up quite a few fences, as you might have guessed. Figures it's easier to hold the world at a distance than open herself up to ridicule.
Because of the pregnancy?
It doesn't help. She's different, in a world where fitting in is the only way.
High school, got it.
How far along is she?
7 months. Due the second week of August.
I feel sorry for her.
Dixie Joe's eyes cooled and her posture stiffened.
Don't you ever say that again, Stella. Innie's tough as the hinges on the gates of hell, but I'll tell you what will break her. Pity.
Wanna help? Don't make her feel inferior. Treat her same as you would anyone else.
She relaxed against the desk, trying to slow her breathing.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean for that to come out so harsh. But Innie's... how do I say this? I feel a bit responsible for her.
That girl could use a little kindness. That's all I'm trying to say.
I took her scolding to heart, and made a mental note to never bring up Innie's pregnancy again. But it did make me wonder. What else was going on with Innie? I sensed Dixie Joe's worry ran deeper than her pregnancy. What was the rest of the story?
Now, is the trash out? Dixie Joe asked, her voice returning to its normal pleasantness. Is the ice cream machine clean?
Yes.
Good. See you Thursday. Night, Stella. While pedaling to Carmina's, I passed a lit-up convenience store with two cars in the parking lot. The red barn advertised gas, cigarettes, and hot sandwiches. My meals at the sundown were discounted, but smelling frying onions and boiling chicken mixed with the tang of human perspiration for 6 straight hours was enough to halt my appetite at work. Now I was starving, and I propped my bike against a tree and rifled through my pocket, coming up with $30 in tips. My blood sugar was so low, I would have willingly traded all my money for an ice-cold Coke. I was halfway across the parking lot when I saw him. Trigger McClure leaned against the brick storefront, watching cars zip down the road with hawkish focus. One truck slowed and pulled into the lot. Trigger immediately straightened, staring at the truck greedily. A man in ripped jeans slid out of the truck and ambled toward the red barn's doors, paging through his wallet for cash. At that moment, Trigger detached himself from the wall and greeted the man in friendly tones.
"What's it gonna take to get you to buy me a six-pack?" I heard Trigger say casually. "How's a 20 sound? You keep the change?"
The guy uttered a throaty laugh.
"Why not? I remember being your age. Sucks, don't it?"
Trigger clapped him on the back and passed over the 20.
"I owe you, man."
"Just make us proud when you're in the majors, you hear?"
I pulled back into the shadows, watching the scene play out. Minutes later, the man came out with 2 bags of groceries. He handed the 6-pack to Trigger, and the two exchanged jokes that were too quiet for me to hear, other than the occasional boom of laughter. Soon after, the man left. Trigger climbed inside his own truck and stayed there. With his lights off, it was impossible to see what he was doing. But I had a pretty good guess. It didn't raise my opinion of him, but I shelved any remaining thought of Trigger. I didn't want to think about him. I wanted an ice-cold drink and to sit under an AC vent with my hair lifted so the artificial breeze would whisper over my neck. Inside, I grabbed a bottle of Coke from the icebox and browsed the sandwiches in the deli case. While I was making my selection, the cashier, a woman with bleached hair and messy eyeliner, took off her apron and hollered into the back room.
"Theo!"
A scrawny, bespectacled kid who had a constellation of acne dotting his chin stuck his head out the door.
"Right here, Mom."
"I'm taking 15, she told him, reaching for the cigarettes and lighter in her back pocket. She'd lit up and completed a full drag before the exit doors closed at her back.
"Can I help you?"
Theo asked me brightly, his voice cracking with puberty. I set my food, I'd decided on a ham and Swiss sandwich, on the counter and gave him a conspiratorial smile. How old are you?
16.
Liar. He swallowed, his Adam's apple bobbing nervously.
14. Are you going to turn my mom in? I only work after 9 when she's on break. 15 minutes here and there can hardly be called breaking the law. Otherwise, I just hang out in the back room and play video games.
I didn't hear any video games. Theo looked ready to wet his pants. He glanced down and saw that his hands were shaking. Quickly, he folded his arms over his chest to hide his nervousness. What were you really doing in the back room? I asked, thinking I already had a good idea. Assuming he had a computer and wasn't playing video games, I could think of only one other reason a 14-year-old kid would be glued to a screen. So he took me completely unaware when he whispered miserably,
"Sewing. I was sewing."
He dropped his chin and hunched his shoulders as if bracing himself for my certain ridicule. Not 20 minutes ago, Dixie Joe had scolded me for pitying Innie. But I couldn't look at Theo's despairing face and not feel sorry for him. Sewing, I said, trying to sound casual and interested. What's so bad about that? Theo jerked his eyes around the store, but even after confirming we were alone, he motioned for me to lower my voice.
You're not going to make fun of me?
He blinked owlishly up at me, clearly baffled. What kinds of things do you sew? His face softened fractionally.
Well, right now, I'm working on a sports coat. It's hard to find an impeccably tailored blazer in Thunder Basin. I'm using a bright navy wool and hope to have it ready to wear by autumn.
He stopped himself, chewed his lip, and examined my face earnestly, gauging whether to reveal more. I'd like to learn how to hem my clothes, I said. In Philly, my mom routinely used a seamstress. Inga was her name, I think. But Theo was right. Things were different in Thunder Basin. I didn't know where, or even if, I could get my nicer clothes tailored. More important, would I even have an occasion to wear them here? Maybe you could teach me sometime, I suggested just the same. Theo's entire face seemed to melt with happiness.
Of course, anytime. It's not hard at all, and I'm a great teacher, honestly. I'm not tooting my own horn, even though it sounds like I am.
It's a date. Bumping his glasses up his nose again, Theo beamed, and then his eyes shifted behind me. The color drained from his face, and he gulped.
Oh, no, he whispered hoarsely.
Before I could ask what was wrong, the door chimed, and I turned to see Trigger swagger in, an open beer can in his hand. He saw me at the same moment, chuckled under his breath, and raised the can in a salute. Or maybe he was threatening me with a second dousing of liquid in my face. Either way, the gesture soured my mood.
Theo?
Trigger drawled the kid's name with enough insult to make it sound like the punchline to a crude joke.
Good to see you, my man. I was worried you weren't working tonight. Didn't see you when I stuck my head in earlier. You weren't hiding from me, were you? How many times I gotta tell you? I always find my man.
Theo's eyes dropped to the floor. His chin was tucked against his chest, and when he spoke, it was barely audible.
You got your beer. I saw that man give it to you. Can you please just go?
Go? We have a deal, Theo.
Theo blinked nervously at the side doors.
My mom will be back any minute.
Your mom's an alcoholic. Trigger cut in. I saw the Smirnoff tucked under her arm. She's gonna pass out by the dumpsters and be out cold for hours. It's just you and me. No mommy dearest to save you.
The teasing left his voice.
You owe me a case of beer. Pass it over. Quick now. I'm behind schedule 'cause of you.
My mom keeps meticulous inventory records. If you continue to come in every weekend at the end of the month, she's going to notice we're short 4 cases of Miller High Life.
You're a smart kid, Trigger said. Work it out.
Someone has to pay for the beer, Theo insisted.
You're stealing from our store.
Trigger gave a sigh of exaggerated patience and walked over to jab Theo in the chest.
It ain't stealing if it's a donation. Get that in your head. Now grab me a case or you're not invited to the party.
I don't care about the parties anymore. I made a mistake. I don't want to go, Theo stammered.
You should leave. You really should go now.
Trigger dropped his smile and put an edge in his tone. He leaned heavily on the counter, causing Theo to shuffle backward 2 steps.
I'm gonna give you 5 seconds to give me the beer, you zit-faced runt. 5, 4.
I watched Theo's lip begin to quiver, and I inwardly groaned.
Damn my sense of moral duty.
I dealt with Trigger last night, and while I wasn't in the mood to do it again, I felt I'd fare better than Theo, who looked moments away from crying. Trigger had caused enough tears this week. Plus, my coke was getting warm. I hadn't stood on my feet for 6 hours shuttling trays of food to reward myself with a lukewarm soda. Trigger had set his can of beer on the counter, and I slid it away from my sandwich and coke. I did it with enough force to make it clear I was here first and didn't appreciate him cutting in line.
How much do I owe? I asked Theo.
You again, Trigger said to me, his mouth forming a swaggering smile. Don't you got something better to do than follow me?
I was here first, I said simply.
You always this prickly? A girl cactus, that's what you are.
He stroked a finger down my arm and I batted it away. If he touched me again, I'd break his finger.
How much do I owe? I repeated more firmly to Theo.
$5.97, he said nervously.
Here's 10.
And how much does a case of Miller High Life cost? Theo's chin jerked up and he watched me with amazement and guilt in equal measure.
Don't worry about it, he muttered. I'll cover the cost.
Trigger chuckled, waving for Theo to be quiet.
I'm not gonna let a pretty girl buy my beer.
He faced me.
But I'd love to get you a drink.
Once Theo gets me that case, why don't you hop in my truck? Great party happening tonight at Lake Maloney. I'll show you a good time.
Go on, Theo. Don't make this girl come to your rescue.
Oh, I wasn't offering to pay for the beer, I chimed in. Just curious how much you were trying to walk off with. Trigger frowned at me.
What?
You have exactly 5 seconds to get out of here before I call the cops, I told him. I didn't have a cell, but I'd seen a payphone out front and I knew 911 calls were free. He shook his head, puzzled.
What?
He echoed. Let me make this simple. I pointed to the doors. Walk that way, don't look back, and don't come in here again. Ignoring me, he tilted his head to one side. Through the tipsy glaze in his eyes, I saw a flash of something that made my stomach squeeze.
Have I seen you before?
I swallowed but kept the nerves out of my voice.
Yeah, yesterday. Remember? You threw your drink in my face?
No, before then.
His voice trailed off, but he eyed me with more intensity, as if trying to recall something from long ago. Whatever he was reaching for, I couldn't let him find it.
You're drunk, Trigger. You can't see straight, let alone think rationally. You shouldn't be driving. Call a friend to pick you up.
I swear. Something about you. Go.
I gave him a light shove for emphasis. A look of concentration still clouded his features, but to my relief, he let my shove propel him backward toward the doors. He pointed an unsteady finger at Theo.
I'll be back. Next time, no hiding behind your girlfriend, he slurred with a lopsided smile,
the alcohol clearly starting to give him a serious buzz. The minute Trigger was outside, I said to Theo, lock the doors and call the police. He balked.
What?
If you're not going to, hand the phone over. I'll call.
What are you going to tell them?
The truth. Trigger will kill me if I turn him in. If you call, it will make everything 10 times worse. Please don't do it.
Stop being so dramatic. He's drunk. He shouldn't be driving. Anyway, he can't come after you. He'll be on record for harassing you, and the cops won't tolerate it. I plucked the cell phone from the chest pocket of his shirt and dialed. Theo clenched his fists under his chin, his face greening by the second. I thought about reassuring him further, but didn't think he'd listen. I knew he'd be fine. Soon enough, he'd see that I was right. Despite how much I'd complained about the constant supervision of the U.S. Marshals, if there was one thing I'd learned about law enforcement during my 3 whirlwind days with them, it was that I could depend on them. Without hesitation, I made the call. 10 minutes later, a uniformed officer tapped on the glass and I let him in. While Theo wrung his hands and shot me looks of deep uncertainty, the officer took my statement. When I implicated Trigger, the officer's brows swept up. He held that mildly interested expression while I finished giving my whole account, then said,
"You sure you want to stick with this story?"
It almost sounded like he was advising me against reporting Trigger. Surely I was just misreading.